You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Okay, let's get it locked on LSU, your team every day. I'm Matt Moscona, ESPN Radio, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Alexandria, CST, and right here for the Locked On LSU podcast. Baseball at the box this weekend. The basketball Tigers are headed up to Como to take on the Missouri Tigers. Let me start, though, with what kind of grabbed a lot of headlines Thursday afternoon and evening, which is a leaked story about an investigation into former LSU coach Les Miles from 2013, 8 years ago. One of the questions I've gotten after this leaked is, you know, is this going to affect LSU because of what happened with Les Miles? I want to be abundantly clear. So I really, really hope that this message, that I'm able to communicate this message adequately, accurately, and in a concise manner that you understand what is happening here. The Les Miles story is a red herring. It is a distraction. It has been leaked to distract you and the rest of the public consciousness from what is coming today, Friday. A quick backstory. And by the way, I'm not exonerating Les. I'm not defending Les. I'm just explaining what's happening. Several months ago, there were allegations in a USA Today story which suggested LSU mishandled sexual misconduct allegations within the athletic department. That would be in violation of federal Title IX law. That is a big deal. The Darius Geis, Drake Davis stories, not just what those men are accused of doing, but how LSU handled or did not handle it is what could land LSU running afoul of federal law. That's the issue. So the story breaks. LSU says, listen, we need to be proactive. This will not stand. We're going to conduct an investigation. So LSU hires a law firm, Hush Blackwell, to investigate LSU. This takes months and months and months and months. And now, today, Friday, the Hush Blackwell report finally is going to be released. The day before that Hush Blackwell report is released, the Les Miles story leaks. Now understand, Hush Blackwell did not investigate Les Miles or allegations against him from 2013. That was another law firm back then, Taylor Porter. When the allegations in 2013 came against Les Miles, LSU hired a different law firm, Taylor Porter, to investigate. And I'm oversimplifying, but basically what they said is, well, she's saying you did this stuff. We can't really find any evidence of it, so you're not punished, but if you're doing this, stop it. That's unless to his point says, I never did any of this. So it's he said, she said. Taylor Porter investigates, can't find any evidence of the allegations, but says, hey, if you're doing anything, stop it. And Les goes on coaching. That has nothing, zero, at all, nothing, not a Nathan, anything to do with a federal Title IX investigation. Nothing at all. That has been leaked, so you and everyone else are distracted from the story, which is the Hush Blackwell report, which is really serious, which is going to be released today, and they did it because two reasons. Number one, LSU is trying to, number one, distract from what's coming today, and number two, that, you know, knowing that Les Miles is a big public figure and that's going to garner a lot of attention, which, success, they've managed to do that. Number two, they're trying to illustrate, you see, it's not us. It's not the current university administration. It's not Scott Woodward. It's not Ed Ogeron and his staff. It was King Alexander, Joe Oliva, Les Miles 8 years ago, bygone era. It was them. It was them. It was them. Don't punish us. We're the ones who, when we found out about this, we had no idea when we found out about it, we went and hired the law firm to investigate to get to the bottom of it. That's what this is about. Listen, I don't know what the Hush Blackwell report is going to say when it's released today, what the effect of it's going to be, but this is very clearly a red herring. This is LSU leaking a story that it's had for 8 years. For 8 years. and they leak it the day before the Hush Blackwell report is going to be released for one reason only, to distract from what is coming today. And as I mentioned, to pin it on a past era and not this current administration. Stay tuned. Okay, that's off the court, off the field. What about this weekend on the field, on the diamond, on the court? Dane Bradshaw, SEC Network, talks some LSU hoops with us next. Stay here. And let me, of course, remind you about betonline.ag. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Betonline.ag, LSU, Mizzou, and hoops on Saturday. Need a place to bet on that game? Betonline.ag. Remember, use the promo code LOCKEDON and get a 50% welcome bonus when you sign up. It's free to open an account when you make your deposit of funds. Promo code LOCKEDON to get a 50% welcome bonus. If you want to bet LSU hoops or any NCAA basketball, you can do it. You can also, of course, wager on the NBA, the NHL, prop bets, live in-game betting. It's all there at betonline.ag. Just more fun watching sports when you have a little action on the game. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Today on the Locked On Today podcast, Big Ben is back in the yellow and black. Is that a good thing for the Pittsburgh Steelers? Get more of the sports news you need in less time with Locked On Today podcast. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts. LSU Hoops wraps up the regular season on Saturday in Columbia against Missouri. Had a chance to visit with Dane Bradshaw of the SEC Network. After LSU wrapped up a four seed, another double-digit win season in the SEC. And we talked a lot with Dane about the SEC, but I started with that when Will Wade said, you'd have thought I was crazy whenever when I got here and I told you we'd have back-to-back-to-back top four finishes and back-to-back-to-back double-digit win seasons in the SEC. You thought I was crazy. I asked Dane Bradshaw, would you have thought Will was crazy back then?
No, I really wouldn't have, and that's not trying to look smart in hindsight. I was familiar with his career. Got to know him a little bit. I live in Chattanooga when he was at UTC, followed his success here, and knew that the cupboard was not bare at LSU. And Johnny Jones had some talent in there previously, and the recruiting grounds. And look, when I played, LSU had a ton of talent. It was Tyrus Thomas, Glenn Davis, Daryl Mitchell, you name it. And so, I was accustomed to seeing LSU being one of the, top 3 to 5 teams in the league. So when I see Will Wade's success, to me that is more about bringing it back to normal from my perspective.
So this LSU team has been, it's fair to say, this team has been inconsistent. We've seen ebbs and flows throughout this year. But if I were to ask you to put a bow, with one conference game to go, put a bow on LSU, how would you describe to this point this season for LSU?
I think a lot of it is how can they get their best players all playing well in the same game, which you guys have seen. Darius Days, obviously, is, for whatever reason, he's their glue guy with his play, but they seem to play better when he plays better. I do have an unproven theory, though, and I know Will Wade talks a lot about, hey, our one-shot defense isn't that bad. It's our first-shot defense. It's the rebound. But they get so many, and they're really good on offense, and they get, their efficiency numbers are good and all that. But as you guys know, it is a lot of one-on-one plays, and it's not just AAU style throw the ball out there. I mean, it's strategic matchup plays, but it is sort of here, you go have a turn. And then here, now it's your turn, Cam Thomas. Here, now it's your turn, Turner Watt. And so part of me wonders if just subconsciously, just some of that, my turn individuality on offense, if that bleeds over to the defensive side where it's like, let me just worry about getting my guy. And, it's not really it's not as connected on the defensive end. And is that in relation to the fact that on offense it's a little bit of kind of worrying about getting yours when your time comes up? I don't know, but I think some of those inconsistencies are concerning. And, Will Wade's teams are usually the tougher teams. They know how to finish, and it's a credit to him. I mean, I've covered that team several times over the years, and this is the first time I wonder if they're going to win close games, because in the years past, they just always found a way more times than not win those, you know, one, two possession type games. And it was typically because of the cumulative effect throughout the course of the game of some of the offensive rebound and hustle type plays that they had that I just, when I watch them now, they don't really separate themselves amongst the other teams as the hardest working team. Whereas in years past, I felt like they stood out more.
That is fair. Dane Bradshaw is with us on Twitter at Dane Bradshaw. I'll come back to LSU in a bit, but I do want to get some perspective. I know you had Alabama last night, the Tide win the SEC, but LSU got to see Arkansas on Saturday and they won 10 straight conference games. That hasn't happened since the year they won the national championship. If I asked you to pick who has the better position team to make a run in March, is it Arkansas or is it Alabama?
I'm still going Alabama, and I hope they get another head-to-head matchup in the SEC tournament because I would, and I'm totally impressed with Arkansas. I'm not taking anything away. But I think people oftentimes just underestimate how quick teams can make adjustments. Alabama got killed in that head-to-head matchup by Arkansas getting to the line. They were a plus 35 on free throw attempts. I mean, just think about how mad your fan base would be if the other team shot 35 more free throws this year. But that's what happened in the Arkansas.
The refs cheat us, Dane. They cheat us every time, Dane. The SEC office is in Birmingham, Dane.
The plus 35 was the biggest free throw difference in an SEC game in over a decade. So, like, oh, man, I mean, the fans would be all over that stat. But, you know, good teams and well-coached teams make adjustments. It's like if a team kills us on the offensive glass one game and we play them again in 2 weeks, a lot of fans are like, oh, yeah, we can't win that game because, you know, they're so good on the offensive glass. Well, you know what? If we emphasize all week in practice and we learned our lesson, guess what? We're probably going to take that away. And so I'm not ready to say Arkansas is better than Alabama. And I also think, you know, teams get the opportunity to play Alabama now for a second time, maybe third time in the SEC tournament. So they're more familiar with them. When Alabama gets into the NCAA tournament, and yes, of course, there's plenty of film on them, but film is one thing. Playing against that high-powered offense and how hard they attack the rim and how well they shoot it from three is a whole different learning experience. So, and you combine that with a pretty good seed. I think a 15 seed and then the next round, the 7-10 game, I think they're going to be a little bit shell-shocked, and I think Alabama's offensive firepower is going to really ignite in the NCAA tournament. I'm not saying I expected in the SEC tournament, given the familiarity of the other team, but in the NCAA tournament, I think Alabama starts to take off where they were early in the season offensively.
He's on Twitter at Dane Bradshaw. What's happened to Tennessee over the last month?
Man, if I had that answer, I'd be making a lot of money. I think Rick Barnes is looking for that answer, too. The key word is inconsistency. They really should have three good weapons to their offense. And we've seen it before as Tennessee fans. We've seen them play through the post with John Fulkerson, Eve Pond, two, you know, household names in the SEC that just have not had very good senior seasons. We've seen Rick Barnes' great offense with the motion offense where they're passing, sharing, they're assisting on, you know, 70% of their make, that sort of thing. And if you take all that away, they have these two great five-star freshmen, Keon Johnson, James Springer, who can break down one-on-one. The issue is most games only one of those three or sometimes zero of those three show up. But we've seen historically all three of them are capable of those weapons are capable of clicking at the same time. And but it is a it's a total confidence thing right now. I look for them to play really well on Sunday against Florida. Rivalry game. They'll have a week off. They didn't have a midweek game this week. They got beat up by Auburn on Saturday. But instead of just them not playing well, they got out tough. And they got manhandled on the offensive glass. And so why I think that's good for them is all of a sudden as a player, you start worrying less about your shooting slump and more about being the tougher player and the hustle points. And when you start playing that hard and focusing on that stuff, the rest seems to follow in suit. So I'm expecting a good performance out of Tennessee on Sunday.
I got a couple more. Dane Bradshaw, SEC Network, is our guest. Let me circle back to LSU and also kind of direct the convo to Missouri. LSU and Missouri are going to play Saturday in a makeup game. From LSU's perspective, they're playing for seeding now. I think it's safe to say they're in. Now, what's a realistic seed? Thumbnail, if you would, Dane, on this LSU team going to Columbia to take on Mizzou.
Boy, this is going to be a good matchup for LSU in terms of Will Wade challenging his team on that toughness factor, because that's what Konzo Martin teams are all known for. They've got a very veteran ball club. Big man Jeremiah Tillman has gotten so much better, more reliable for them. He'll be on his senior night, even if it's sort of a half-hearted crowd for right. senior night, not what we're used to. Half-hearted is probably a bad description, but they'll be playing with a ton of emotion as well. So, and LSU's locked up the double bye. I think Missouri is, even though Missouri's got the better record and better seeding currently in the NCAA tournament, they're the ones that are, that probably need a win even more so than LSU from a confidence standpoint. Missouri's just got to get back on track, because LSU's been, they've been inconsistent all year. They've been, on, off, and you're kind of accustomed to it. But Missouri's the one that is starting to see themselves slide from a top 10 type team to a bubble type 8-9 matchup. And so I think from just a mental standpoint, Missouri needs this one even more so than LSU.
Go behind the scenes of the game you love and get all sides of the story with Rejecting the Screen podcast. Each week, Noah Kozlov and Adam Stenko get personal while interviewing players, coaches, media members, all the people who make the NBA happen. Subscribe to Rejecting the Screen wherever you get podcasts. LSU baseball back on the diamond this weekend out at the box. They'll take on Oral Roberts in a three-game series. 1 o'clock on Friday, a little day action for the Tigers. 3 o'clock on Saturday, and then a 2 o'clock first pitch on Sunday. So a lot of day action for this weekend out at the box for LSU. Jaden Hill on Friday, Landon Marceau Saturday, A.J. Labus on Sunday, as we would expect. When you look at Oral Roberts, member of the Summit League, they're 2-6 on the year so far, hitting just .223 as a team with four homers. So Oral Roberts, not a very strong offensive team. It's one of those games and one of those series where you would really expect LSU's dominant pitching to shine through and overwhelm Oral Roberts in this ballgame. Similarly, Oral Roberts' pitching staff has an ERA just under 5. 4.93 is the team's cumulative ERA. And they've allowed 6 homers in 8 games. This would certainly look like an opportunity for LSU to keep the bats going and to overwhelm a lesser opponent. When you look at the pitchers for Oral Roberts, James Notary gets the ball on Friday. 4.76 ERA, 5 strikeouts, 3 walks, in 11 and a third innings pitch. So for a Friday night guy with an ERA at almost 5, that ain't great. Isaac Coffey is a righty who will start game 2. Looks much better. 16 strikeouts to just 1 walk. 16 strikeouts in 11 innings pitched, a 1.54 ERA. If there is a game where you circle it and you go, okay, that's the one that maybe could keep LSU off balance, it's Saturday. Isaac Coffey, the sophomore righty, a gigantic strikeout. Doesn't walk in 11 innings pitch, 11 and 2/3, 1 walk, 16 strikeouts. So more than a strikeout an inning and only 1 walk per 11.2 innings pitch. So that's the guy that you really probably keep an eye on. And then Tanner Rogan, their Sunday guy, looks like a Sunday guy. A 3.37 ERA, 10 and 2/3 innings pitch, 6 strikeouts, 3 walks. So not overwhelming with the starting pitcher. Clearly, Isaac Coffey has been their best so far, their Saturday guy. So keep an eye on that Marceau-Coffey matchup in game 2. The other thing that I really want to keep an eye on is, do we see Kay Doty this weekend? Of course, Doty had the shoulder injury, suffered celebrating his walk-off last week. No structural damage, better than they thought. So is Doty back in the lineup this weekend for LSU? And if not, how do they handle the middle infield? Do we see more of Will Safford at second base? If Doty's back, does he play second? Does maybe Safford get a look at third? Is Drew Bianco more involved? Those are all things to keep an eye on as we move throughout this weekend series. Tigers and Eagles from Oral Roberts this weekend, 1 o'clock Friday, 3 o'clock Saturday, 2 o'clock Sunday. And, we will be here on Monday to recap all of your action this weekend. So, have an awesome weekend. Enjoy the basketball and the baseball. And we'll be back Monday for the Locked On LSU podcast, your team every day.